On today's College Football Inquirer, with members of Congress deciding if they want to add a Lane Kiffin provision to a bill currently in the House, we ask the question, how much is a coach actually worth in an era when you can pay players? Also, did Trinidad Shambliss' fight against the NCAA cost him the cover of the EA Sports video game? Plus, it's March Madness. We're coming up with a bracket, but this is a fun one. Since the NCAA may or may not be enforcing tampering, the coaches may want to enforce it themselves. So we are going to have a bracket of coaches who could beat up the other coaches who tamper with their players. Who's the one you don't want to tamper with? All on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Stephen Godfrey and Ross Dellinger. I am Andy Staples. And Ross, you have another juicy nugget today. Your On Three column discusses, it's the score act again. We've talked about it a lot, but this has got a very, very sexy potential provision in the score act. And I know that sounds
not sexy legal column.
Yeah.
But it is sexy because it involves the guy everyone clicks on, Lane Kiffin.
We're trying to make the score act sexy or interesting at all, since we've talked about it now for a year.
Hey, legislation, you up?
Yeah. So the score act, which was, by the way, supposed to tentatively was set to go to the floor next week, has been moved back to mid to late April, probably.
Shocking.
Big surprise. What? Yeah, big surprise. We all know in September it was attempted on the floor and it got pulled. In December it was attempted and got pulled. So here we go. We'll see what happens there. But in the meantime, to try to get votes, they're obviously modifying it. We've talked a lot about the modifications, including a commission that would study the NCAA and governance, and probably lead to an overhaul of the NCAA.
Ooh, blue ribbon panel.
But the new stuff is involves transfers and involves coaches. I think there's a provision that would sort of ensure that athletes that transfers meet certain academic requirements, maybe even stay at a school for a full academic year. And then the coach provision is what the Lane Kiffin comes into play. When this bill got pulled in December, and I was down at the Capitol for the vote, and then it got pulled 30 minutes before the vote was supposed to be scheduled. Part of the reason, there's plenty of reasons why it got pulled, but one of the reasons was, you know, a few days before that, guys, is when Lane Kiffin left Ole Miss for LSU in the middle of a season and got paid $13 million a year to do so. And you can imagine that got the attention of lawmakers. We don't, big surprise. And it probably didn't help the bill in any way in getting through and getting the votes. So maybe as sort of a reaction to that, a modification they're making would at least put like a provision that any rule the NCAA makes needs to factor in coaches not leaving their team in the middle of a season. Is basically how probably it'll be worded. So any rule or policy the NCAA may make, because this bill, the SCORE Act, lets the NCAA or any governing body make the rules. It just gives sort of parameters or guidelines for those rules. So one of the guidelines would be, hey, a coach can't leave a team in the middle of a season.
So you just want to create a new class of plaintiff. Essentially.
So
all the coaches. Here's my question. Two things about this.
Andy.
Are they overreacting to one person doing this? Because we saw Bob Chesney and John Sumrall in the same situation stay with their teams for the playoff. And nobody seemed to have an issue with it. Like UCLA didn't worry about Chesney doing it. Florida didn't worry about Sumrall doing it. They're like, cool, we're hiring coaches in the playoff, and they're gonna coach their team in the playoff. Now, this was different because the coach wasn't going to a rival school with the possibility of poaching players. But I also think, like, Lane Kiffin is a one-of-one type guy. I don't think there's going to be a lot of people coaching teams in the future that have a chance to advance in the playoff, a serious chance to advance in the playoff, that would go somewhere else. I just don't think that's going to happen very often. But the bigger question, I think, this brought up in my mind, and I want to talk to you guys about this, is in the era when you can pay players, how much is a coach worth? Is a coach actually worth $13 million? Mm-hmm. Is it that important that you have that guy? Or can you move more toward replacement level if you have good enough players? And I think that's a question a lot of schools are going to wrestle with over the next few years.
Mm, that's being discussed too, by the way, like coaches' salaries, and do we want to put something guardrails around that in new any class kind of plaintiff, legislation? Yep. Yeah.
Can we back up for a second? So your coach can't leave in the season, or what? What is the consequence? Just so I'm clear.
Strongly worded letter.
So I don't know that there is a consequence in the there will be a consequence in the legislation. I think. Okay. That the NCAA or whatever governing body would have to probably impose that, which I would assume would be a penalty on the school that hired the coach, or maybe a penalty on the coach himself.
What kind of penalty do you think?
Could be a fine, like, could be roster spots, but roster spots hurt players. That
suspension, game suspension.
Let me back off the mic for this. Okay. There. All right, good.
Thank you, Mike Gundy.
I didn't want to blow off the EQ on our tracks.
It could be game suspension, like they're talking about for some of these tampering rules, which everybody's a little getting
which they're never actually going to do.
I tell you what, if a coach serves a one game suspension for a tampering violation, I will, Andy. What's an insane thing that I can do?
Oh, shave your head. Don't do this.
You have amazing lettuce.
Food related.
He's not going to shave his head.
I've got a huge head, guys.
Can we find the hottest wing ever and make you eat it on the pod?
Yeah. I'll definitely
pepper.
Do that.
I'll hot ones
on air for
sure.
Yeah,
and then you just have to talk your way through it. No milk or anything. You just got to try to keep talking.
I will do a hot ones regiment while reading off a pre-prepared statement about various things that are good about the NCAA. How's that?
I love it. I love it.
One time, a couple years ago for charity.
Puts on a hell of a softball tournament. Whoa!
During the pandemic, I raised, I think it was $20,000 for the Nashville Restaurant Workers Association. While doing the McDonald's challenge, Herb Hand actually coached me through that. And then while watching
Herb Hand, the offensive line coach at Florida State, by the way.
Oh, like several O-line coaches are like, okay, what's your strategy going in? And then I also watched a replay of the Patriots-Falcons Super Bowl while doing it to raise money. This is all true. So if this happens, Ross, and someone serves a one-game suspension for tampering, I will do all those things. If that actually comes to fruition. Okay. Andy, that's you ask questions, you set the table for this show. It's the format. Mm-hmm. It's how this whole shebang works. This is probably the biggest question you've asked, because I think there's a lot here. One, I totally agree with you that you are in the singularity when you're talking about Kiffin. However, the idea of him being able, because he has festered into such a bombastic personality, does not necessarily mean he should be exempt from a rule set. However, I also agree with you in that I don't think anyone else in that pantheon of coaches, or any coaches right now that we know of, are going to be willing to act like Lane Kiffin by any measure, right? So, I begrudgingly agree that we probably won't have to deal with a Lane Kiffin type situation again. However,
you kind of had it, because Michigan was interested in Kalen DeBoer,
right?
But Kalen DeBoer was not about to entertain it when he was about to coach Alabama in a playoff game.
You know what the subtext of this actually is, and this isn't exactly what you wanted to ask. The situation was here's why that's different, Andy. Kalen DeBoer was the head coach of a program that's won more national titles in the last 30 years than any other team in the sport.
Right. Very. It is a different situation.
Lane Kiffin was in more of an Indiana situation in which he did not agree with the institution, the way that you had alignment from Kurt Cignetti in Indiana, which is, I'm absolutely where I need to be. We have everything that we need to be successful and compete for championships. And then they did. They won a national championship at Indiana. So that was the perception issue. And then you also had a lot of machinations going on behind the scene and stuff with Saban and the agents and all that. It was a different dynamic. But Lane Kiffin also, again, because it's a singularity, Andy, he has never done anything where he didn't actually really profit from the attention. He's not going to. So Kurt Cignetti, guys, we did a show, right? He comes out, he slaps down the basic statement, I'm not interested in Penn State. Boom, we're moving on. There's an extension. And that was like, I want to say that was old news before November 10th. I'm pulling a date out.
They did not let that fester at all.
Yeah, we were done and dusted. I don't know if Lane Kiffin was at Alabama and Michigan came calling, I don't think he would do that because Lane Kiffin's currency is Lane Kiffin. And so, yes, I think it's I'm contradicting myself here because he was in a unique situation where no one thought Ole Miss would be a national title contender, right?
Including him,
which even though they didn't make it to the title game, I would say they're incorrect, right?
Yeah,
because they were a national title contender.
They were
contender.
A couple of bounces. And look, you put Trinidad Chambliss against Indiana. That's a fun
things
game.
Things change. Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. And then at the same time, you're right, Andy. It's hard to solve for Lane Kiffin because you're applying rational thought, which doesn't really occur. Now, I'm going to try and move this forward. How much is a coach worth is what you're asking.
And it's hard for me because my initial thought was once you could pay the players, the value of the coach goes down. You still have significant value in a coach because they need to evaluate, select, all that. But it would go down. Cignetti has kind of changed my mind on that because he didn't have the best roster this year. Like there's the NFL draft will tell you he didn't. Like he's got the number one player because they picked the right quarterback in the portal. But he didn't have the best roster in the college football playoff, but he had the best team. And that's got to be partly him, or mostly him.
Who won the Super Bowls for the Chiefs? Was it Andy Reid or was it Pat Mahomes? And do you think that if you pulled the coach out, would Pat Mahomes have as many Super Bowl appearances?
I don't know if Patrick Mahomes becomes Patrick Mahomes if he doesn't get drafted by a team that has Andy Reid coaching it.
Okay, but at the same time, I think you would also agree that there's no way Andy Reid is going to win those Super Bowls without Pat Mahomes, right?
Right. Donovan McNabb, pretty good quarterback. Couldn't win with him.
Yeah. So I think what we're evolving towards is closer to that professional model where no one doubts the value of the right head coach, right? But at the same time, no one is installing the head coach as the sort of the keystone of a program. And I think that's the difference, right? The NFL is a quarterback league, and then you try and build defensive depth. And if you do those two things in a very simplistic manner, you're going to contend for a Super Bowl. You're going to go to the postseason, and that's the metric for success, right?
And actually, I'm glad you brought that up because I'm thinking about the guy who was the runner-up in college football this year, the guy who made it to the national title game and lost to Cignetti, Mario Cristobal, whose philosophy has been, if I build a good enough offensive line, we'll always be good. And he may be right about that.
Yes. I definitely think he is. So what if instead of a hot take, Ross, it's just you don't need a head coach anymore, screw him. And but it's also not the statue building cult of personality that college football was sort of founded on, where the coach is by far the biggest and most important thing, right? By far. We are seeing we're seeing these two factors level in a little closer to one another.
And the coaches seem to know that in a way, like we've seen multiple instances of coaches giving back money, part of their salary to the team to pay for the roster, or at least help the school fill the
Brian
hole.
Brian Kelly, Mike Norvell.
And recently, Morgan Scalley of Utah did it. Did $2 million.
Morgan Scalley did it. He's also, because when the guy that they kind of gently nudged out winds up at Michigan, it's like, oh, wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I need to score some political points here.
Took a few players with him and some coaches too. Yeah.
Never appoint a coach in waiting. Ever. Ever. It never works. Ever.
That is going to be a deep in the heart of the offseason episode.
Yeah.
Godfrey. We're just going to have a why you should never appoint a coach in waiting because of all the things that could happen.
100% of the time, it works none of the time.
That smells like gasoline. So
it's a real panther.
this is my curiosity is with Kiffin.
Mm-hmm.
Was it also this might have been his last chance at that kind of payday?
You know, it's
before
funny?
It levels out somewhat. Andy Reid makes a lot of money, so
is
I don't
it
know
level that out? Yeah, keep waiting for it to level out. Yeah.
Andy Reid is the highest paid coach in the NFL. That's why I use that example. A lot of things here because it is Kiffin, and we're back in the singularity of Lane. Lane has technically done this before. A lot of people have questioned what happens if he stays at Tennessee after the 2009 season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He did a very good job given the circumstances.
I am of the opinion. I have also been informed by, I want to say at this point, 6 or 7 former staffers on that 1 year at Tennessee. And I believe them because of, I know it's alternate history. Like, what if the Nazis won the World War kind of thing? But if, what if Lane Kiffin stays at Tennessee? I think Tennessee would have won a Southeastern Conference championship under Lane Kiffin. I think he was the exact, the perfectly shaped thorn in the side of Urban Meyer. I also think he would have been as, if not equally, as ruthless, brace yourselves, Tuscaloosa, in the level of depraved recruiting necessary to build a roster, right? Like, I know everyone just thinks that everyone signed on to play football.
I mean,
for
he
Alabama.
Almost beat that Alabama
he almost
team
beat
that
Alabama.
Year.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, without
Terrence
Cody,
Cody
Mount
Block.
Cody.
He, exactly. This is what saved him. But he also had the same understanding. I don't know if he would have had the fortitude or the organization, the logistics that prime Alabama Saban era had, for sure. But I do think he would have been as craven and as ruthless, and I know Tennessee's boosters would have been, to compete with Alabama for the very top talent in college football in that era. So he's done this before where he's left one program to go to another, and we don't know if it works out or not at LSU. Okay?
By the way, like lots of still unanswered questions about this, how they're modifying this legislation with this. Like, for instance, a coach, not Lane Kiffin, another coach, is texting me live about the story, and he actually brings up a really good point. Make sure, this is his text, make sure they add that we can't be fired in the middle of a season either. I didn't think about that one, but
new
class
of plaintiff.
Wait, what? You can't, you,
what
so,
have
so
I
we're
said?
Not, we're not firing people in September?
Yeah.
No,
I don't know if I don't know if I like that. Some of us got to run a podcast for a living. Okay?
We have to have,
schools want it both ways. They want the coach to not be able to leave if things are going well, but they want to reserve the right to fire them week two if they choose to do so.
Andy, can you imagine Penn State after Northwestern and UCLA, and we're like, you're stuck with him.
Yeah.
And you know what probably would have happened?
He probably would have gone
like 8-4.
Ethan Ruckelmeyer
has a pretty good end of the season.
Yeah.
They go 8-4,
and
you're like, oh, maybe we should just keep him.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been delicious.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens with
nothing,
this.
Nothing like government enforced when you can hire and fire people, because that happens everywhere. Oh, wait, no, it doesn't happen anywhere.
Andy, this is such a big topic. I feel like we could do like 10 segments on this. To go back to the actual like value proposition of the coach, one of the things that I think the psychology of college football is so centered around that statue, that head coach, that has been the blueprint for time immemorial in this sport.
Yeah.
It's funny because I think what hiring Kiffin does, it's not so much the man that you're bringing on. It's almost like you're giving yourself license to do certain things. So Lane Kiffin's arrival at LSU either demands or causes an increase in a better organization in NIL, right? Better alignment in certain areas. I mean, this is the Nick Saban playbook. It's, you know, did Nick Saban go to Alabama because they had the most potential? Or did Alabama hire Nick Saban because they could unlock the most potential? Right?
And if you talk to people who were with Nick Saban early on in Alabama, they'll tell you the alignment wasn't really there. And it wasn't the way it needed to be. And he had to kind of whip them into shape in terms of fundraising, in terms
Absolutely.
Of how everything operated. Like there were the series of fiefdoms in the booster culture there that he just blew through. He's like, no, you think you're in charge of your little area? No, I am in charge of all of this and you will do what I say.
So that has nothing to do with first quarter, you know, what are our first 15 plays going to be or what defensive back did I recruit? So the way the story was always told to me by people was I was always called the tip of the spear story. And this is why you hire a head coach. This is the true value in college football. It is not because they understand the intricacies of a 3-3-5. I'm just telling you, the tip of the spear story is basically what you said, where he came in and everybody ran their own part of the state and everybody felt like the most important little boy in the booster kingdom. And sometime about going into that first season. By the way, I think Bama owes ULM money for how valuable that loss was in 2007 when Louisiana Monroe beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. Right about that time, Nick Saban comes in and this has been told. It's a little bit apocryphal at this point, but I do know it happened. And it basically says, I am the tip of the spear, meaning that everything organizes under me. You will not run these little booster fiefdoms. Like Mack Brown at Texas, guys, was so amazing at managing the politics of every important guy in every corner of
Texas and Alabama, because these people are literal billionaires.
Yeah. Absolutely. And Mac's true talent, aside from delivering on the day after signing day, you'd get verbals and it was nothing but five stars. Mac managed every swing and you know what that would walk into the facility from every part of that state. Nick just said, I don't have time for this. You will align and you will do exactly what I want when I want it. And if not, you will be cast out like a Pharisee. And that worked at Alabama. That action is part of a skill set. Like I criticize Saban a lot in his later years and how he's shaping his legacy currently. But damn, that man was a warlock or a wizard or whatever to make Alabama function as a single unit. Because Andy, you know, historically before that, you know, DeBose era, Shula era, yeah, everything kind of post Stallings, Alabama had broken into this sort of perpetual civil war amongst who was the most important ex-Bear Bryant, whatever. And it was costing them progress. The same, by the way, and this is not in Alabama. I'm not picking on Bama.
No, this happens in a lot of places.
Tennessee.
Yeah. Post-legendary Auburn. Coach, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Tennessee, Auburn, Florida, yeah. Georgia, like the Jim Donnan years were real. Like this happens everywhere.
Yeah, the Saban thing is so interesting because he recognized, and the thing was, it was his time at LSU that helped him recognize it. He was at LSU where everybody, which brings us back to Kiffin, but at LSU, everybody in the state wants LSU football to succeed. And if you have the strong enough force of personality as the tip of your spear, they will fall in line. And that is they're at right now.
Here's my one rebuke to that. And LSU fans are not going to like this. Alabama worked so well under Saban. And Nick Saban refused to go to Austin, Texas at the height of his run for one reason. And that's that stupid word we use all the time, which is alignment. But you know what it really is? It was fealty. LSU fans, I don't care if you're the governor. I don't care if you own a bunch of offshore oil rigs. I don't care if you're running a crawfish restaurant. It doesn't matter. They all want LSU to win. But what ultimately susses out in history over and over again with LSU is when it comes down to it, a lot of people don't want to put the success of LSU above themselves. They want to still co-author that history and own it. They want to brag on the golf course. That's the difference between a booster fan base that has a handful of national titles and the difference between a booster fan base that basically could put a ring on every finger for the last two decades. That's the real difference.
Well, the way they're spending now down in the Bayou, they're going to give a test to that. We'll see what happens.
I mean, that's
they
great.
Got the roster, they got the quarterback, they have everything they need. And we did a thing on my On Three show of what does success look like for various programs, and for LSU, it was not just make the playoff; it's you got to advance in the playoff, even if you hadn't been there since 2019.
If Flash and the Amex Black bought you know, actually translated to national titles, Texas A&M would have a Hall of Champions right now.
True.
Yep. So it's going to be fascinating to see how this works, but I will enjoy the machinations of a potential provision in a law that tells you when coaches can go and when they can't, because, well, we know that's not going to happen, but it would be really funny if it did.
I don't know, man. I'm going to be honest. It would kind of ruin our business a little bit. I mean, let's put this on Front Street, because I call everybody else out for not being honest.
I don't know. The
honest.
NFL is just smarter about it. Like, yes. It's interesting because the coaches are not so, like, they don't collectively bargain with the NFL. They could theoretically sue over, because remember, the NFL has rules about when coaches can move and when they can't, and when you can interview them, when you can't. They could theoretically sue over that. Like, Brian Flores and several other coaches currently involved in a class action lawsuit against the NFL about collusion. They're claiming that the Rooney Rule interviews, that the sham interviews are serve as collusion. But theoretically, coaches could do that. They could say, you can't place these rules on us, but their system works so efficiently and they feel like they're rewarded well enough, they don't do it.
All right, well,
I don't know that you can make the college system efficient enough because of the way the calendar works.
Yeah. Correct.
Your calendar has to change to an NFL calendar, which it may be changing.
You would need, and we've done other segments on this, you would need the six or seven far more important pieces of that calendar to align first, which feels like kind of impossible right now.
But yeah, no time soon.
If you want to take away anything from this segment, please don't get rid of September firings, because we work in the podcast business.
We need content.
I'm just being transparent, y'all.
I guess last year, the Franklin firing was very early. It was early October.
late yeah. September.
Hey, I know everybody on this podcast. I'll just speak for everybody.
Deshaun Foster was September.
Ross loves when I do that. We all got phone calls at some point by October 1st. Hey, LSU might do this thing. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And that doesn't include Virginia Tech, UCLA, and then Franklin was, I think, sometime thereafter.
Franklin was early October. The UCLA and Virginia Tech were in September. They were like week yeah. three. So yeah.
like and subscribe.
It's amazing. All right. We will see what happens with that. But the tentacles of the Lane Kiffin move continue to branch out. Mm-hmm. The quarterback he brought to Ole Miss last year, who he wanted to come to LSU this year, but decided to stay at Ole Miss, he is now challenging again the NCAA because he feels like his fight against the NCAA cost him some money and one very key endorsement deal. We'll talk about it when we come back. We're back at the College Football Inquirer, and Trinidad Chambliss again in the news because the Ole Miss quarterback, we know he fought to be allowed to play this year in college football rather than go pro. Well, during his fight, there was a little bit of uncertainty, obviously. And before the judge in Mississippi read aloud his decision for over an hour, Trinidad Chambliss might have been, according to court documents, a candidate to be on the cover of the EA Sports college football video game. And he is saying that he now missed out on that key endorsement deal because of his fight for eligibility. So is he going to be able to cash in on the NCAA? Or is this going to be one of those, well, were they going to pick you?
You know what? It sounds like your ability to earn money is being hindered in an America that was founded, gentlemen, on free enterprise. All right? Right? We don't do that socialism. We don't do that's that right. communism.
You're unless out here, it affects our favorite college football team, then we want it to.
Absolutely.
Or unless the NCAA can do something to our rival, then we love it.
I think, Andy, you've pushed back on this before where I've said, you know, guys like Manziel, I believe this is probably, or sorry, not Manziel. Wow, Freudian slip. Although, guess what? It still works. Diego Pavia. guys like Diego Pavia, it's like earn as much as you can in this moment because you're probably not going to have a long-term career playing football, right? Mm-hmm. Chambliss to me is probably has more pro potential than some of these other stories and cases that we've looked at. Although I will say, like, again, from a physical makeup standpoint, like his size does matter so much, even at the quarterback position of just durability. This guy's like, I don't know if this guy's going to make crazy money long term in the NFL just because of his size. Nothing.
I think there's a chance he's on a roster for a while. I just don't know if he's ever becomes a star NFL
starter.
Does
he get that second contract that's significant? Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. So to that end, this is a great example of the NCAA and its various, you know, whether they are straw man committees, you know, like the CSC or whatever, however you want to structure this, suppressing the ability to earn generational wealth or life-changing money, however you want to phrase it, in this small window that you have to so.
My thing has always been, I don't have a problem with them fighting for their eligibility rules because, like I've said on the show many, many times, I think it's the one part where the end consumer is like, I would like there to be some eligibility rules. I'd be good with that.
Sure.
And so in this case, Chambliss, according to court documents, was told he's one of three finalists. And then they said, we can't take the risk because that's the sort of thing that has to be done fairly far in advance. They've got to shoot everything. They've got to make the commercials. They've got to do all that stuff. So they probably need to know. And then last year it was Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams, which they knew because those guys were going into their sophomore seasons. Like they are going to be playing in college. Yeah. They're going to be on the deal. Both of them were, you know, not an issue in terms of off the field stuff. So you didn't have to worry about that. That's what they're looking for, somebody who's a safe bet. And Chambliss is interesting because he's the quickest I've seen. Because since real, quote unquote, real NIL started, you haven't seen a lot of guys get put in national commercials in a timely fashion. That's how you wind up with Drew Aller debuting in a Ram truck commercial with Terry Crews, like the week after he gets hurt. But Chambliss, it was one of the cell phone companies. I don't know if it was AT&T or T-Mobile, but Chambliss showed up in that commercial around playoffs. And it turned out great because it's Trinidad Shambliss in a game that Trinidad Shambliss is playing in.
Yes.
Right.
This is the opposite of the Will Levis Mayo campaign, where Will Levis gets drafted. There's a massive Mayo campaign. After he got drafted, things did not go as well when they changed coaches for the Titans. So that's a good thing, by the way, Andy. Like, Madison Avenue, their ability to expedite this entire process is going to open it. This is going to help more athletes make a buck in the short term. Mm-hmm. But this is all good. It's fantastic.
How much money did he miss out? Godfrey, did it say? I can't remember. I didn't read that. I wonder if it was claiming some kind of monetary damages for missing out on being on the cover.
I'm not sure they specified a dollar figure.
I did not see anything initially. I'm double checking real fast.
I wonder who the other two are, too. I mean, it's Archon. Is it Arch?
I would think Arch, who turned it down last year, I think, because I think they came to him. Why?
Dante Moore.
Would it be Jeremiah again, maybe?
No. It does not have a dollar figure. So just for reference here, on 26, it was Ryan Williams and Jeremiah Smith. On 25, it was Donovan Edwards, Travis Hunter, Quinn Ewers. Mm-hmm. And then the one that everybody remembers was the game that we were all stuck playing for during the break when you couldn't have a video game. Dude, Denard Robinson, man, he got hella branding off that thing because it was like a decade and a half of just everybody playing their copy on PS3 or 360. Real fast, as an aside, just to wreck the segment, can anyone name the two mascots that have appeared as cover athletes on this game?
Oh, my.
Two mascots.
Brutus Buckeye?
In 1996... Tommy Trojan appeared on one of the covers.
Oh.
And then you're never going to guess this one. And I'm fascinated to know what the logic was at EA. In 2009, every SKU, which meant every format of the game, had a different cover athlete. So my beloved sweet boy, Matt Ryan, was on the cover of the PS3 version. Deshaun Jackson was on the cover of the PS2 version. And by the way, if you had a PlayStation Portable, Owen Schmidt from West Virginia.
Wow!
How cool is that?
Ball knowers involved in that situation. The West Virginia fullback.
Right? Yeah. So, and by the way, beautiful man, Owen Schmidt. Sparty, as in Michigan State, was on the cover of
Sparty's
the Wii
pretty
edition.
Iconic.
I guess that was to like appeal to kids. I'm not entirely sure what that was about. Yeah. So,
what year was that?
This was when they split up the SKUs. That was the 2009 edition.
2009.
And they did this again in 2010. The copy I had in 2010 was for 360. So that was the Crabtree. That was Crabtree coming off of the catch against Texas, which is, unlike the Madden curse, the NCAA curse to Chambliss's case is a little bit of a boost. You don't see anyone necessarily fall apart here. I mean, Quinn Ewers was on one of the SKUs for 25, but I wouldn't necessarily say that his career fell apart.
He took him to the semis.
Like, right.
Nothing wrong with that.
Hey, man, I'm just trying to stay off the Texas message board. Yeah. That's all. Then you had, for the most part, as you go, this does not carry the Madden curse. So for a guy like Chambliss, and the one thing that sticks out looking at this list is that most of the cover athletes were heralded at every level. Like, we knew who Mark Ingram was as he ascended through college football to eventually win the Heisman. Travis Hunter, God knows, had so much publicity, right? I could go on and pick out, very rarely do you get the sort of workman-like story of a Trinidad Chambliss. Like, Brian Arakpo's on here, but I'm pretty sure Brian Arakpo is
Was a star. He was Texas's best player. Yeah.
I mean, like, the only other comp I have, Andy, is like Jared Zabransky, the Boise State quarterback.
Yep.
He was on the 08 cover. So it would have been similar to that. But I really would argue that Chambliss is unique in that this is what that game wants to market, which is the, like, people who love that video game, they don't.
You can literally make that character and play him through the recruiting process.
And while the game does not yet have the lower tier schools, the everybody I know who plays the game way more than I get to in this phase of my life, if they went to Bama or Michigan or Florida, they don't play with Bama or Michigan or Florida. The first thing they do is they start a dynasty with Akron and they build it out for 15 years. And Chambliss really represents, I think, the spirit of why people fall in love with that video game. So, I don't know what the validity of the claim is. I don't know if he was a distant third of the three athletes being considered. I do know that this is direct evidence of the NCAA impeding on an individual's right to earn money after the wall has already fallen on player compensation. Yeah.
But again, they're doing it to defend their eligibility rules, which even you, Godfrey, have said you understand why they're doing that. So
yes, yes, to a degree, but I'm also strongly in favor of, and Chambliss would fall under this case as well, of six to play five, five to play five, six to play six, whatever well,
and,
that
and
might
right.
be.
And right, and Chambliss had yeah. a different case than, yeah. say, Joey Aguilar. Like, Chambliss had an argument based on a medical redshirt decision. The NCAA has made thousands of those over the years. They've not really had a lot of rhyme or reason to them, so that's why they challenged it that way. So it makes sense. But I do now I want to know who the other two are. And will we see a two-man cover or a single? Because like,
yeah.
to your point, Godfrey,
yes.
I kind of like the lesser. Like, do you bank on the lesser-known guy who could blow up? Because the one I'm thinking of is a favorite of our producer TJ's, and that's JKS. Jaron Keawe Sagapolotelli at Cal. Like, I think he's going to potentially be a megastar.
Okay. If we're picking low-key picks to then, you're saying, so they're peaking in December while...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about Cam Coleman going to Texas?
Oh, like, yeah. That's right? another
good
one.
That's a good one, too.
But
yeah.
I think they're going to go with much more of a branded... Like, if you look at Ryan Williams, Jeremiah Smith...
I mean,
the
Arch
year prior,
is the obvious choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't...
You could Bryce Underwood.
Yeah. Mm. Mm. That would be a bold move, I think, just because of the perceived instability of what's going on.
I don't perceive instability.
I know you don't. I'm saying yeah. I think outside they might have.
What about Rocco Becht in a new uniform? Because like we know Rocco Becht is a good college quarterback.
Yeah.
And now he's in a famous uniform.
We haven't had an Irish player in a minute, have we?
An Irish player?
No. Oh, CJ Carr.
Notre Dame, not like the actual like.
I thought you meant an actual Irish.
not the alcoholic
Seamus
Catholic
McGillicuddy on the cover of.
Hey, North Carolina has an Irish kicker. Okay, so it's possible.
CJ Carr would be an excellent choice.
Yeah, it seems like my guess is it's three quarterbacks, right?
Yeah,
like. Dante Moore,
well,
Marcel Reed.
If you had CJ Carr, Arch Manning, Bryce Underwood, or CJ Carr, Arch Manning, Julian Sain.
Okay, I'm glad someone just said Sain, because I would feel like we're going to get yelled at if we mention Arch and not Sain.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing Moore? Is, Sain suffers by people thinking Jeremiah Smith's on your team.
Yes.
And maybe you just you run back Jeremiah Smith because he's still. If you ask like an NFL scout who's the best player in college football going into the season, they're all going to say Jeremiah Smith.
I feel like that's, I mean, how many Ohio State quarterbacks can we punish for having good wide receivers?
I don't know. Brian Hartline's not there anymore, so we may not be able to do that much longer.
It looks like, and I don't have inside knowledge, I didn't ask people at EA about this. It looks like based off of their return, there will be at least two different covers. There was a montage cover one year too when they came back. Remember, I don't know if it was like a giant sort of like class. You know those old mascot group photos that we saw, or paintings in the 60s. It was like kind of like styled like.
Well,
that.
And they did that again last year because the photos from the shoot came out. People who were at the shoot who were just snapping pictures, and you could try to ID who's there. Oh, there's DJ Lagway standing next to Kirby Smart. Wonder what they're talking about. Like that whole thing.
So, by the way, the Chambliss case is under appeal, even though there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of, like, confidence from the NCAA in winning that appeal. But it is in an appeal that probably is going to drag on several more months.
Yeah, and so,
so
they're still fighting. So. Like, that would be if the Mississippi Supreme Court were to grant the NCAA's appeal, that would really throw a wrench in the old Ole Miss season. That's a deuce night. Get ready quick.
I'm gonna go ahead and say that probably won't happen.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not
highly confident. Unlikely. Yeah, yeah.
But I am fascinated to see who winds up on the cover of this game because there's a lot of really good returning talent in college football this year. This is and especially big brand quarterbacks. There's a lot of it.
By the way, I don't know if we said this. The
Marcel Reed. We didn't even mention him.
I skipped over him. I like
Marcel. He took us to the playoff.
I know. The complaint has this as a timeline, but I can confirm this just having like I've done when the EA game back, I think I should say this for like journalistic transparency, I did consulting work on the when they returned, like just to help. I think almost everybody in our industry talked to the EA.
The people,
and, like,
the people yeah. who make that game are huge fans. Yeah. They listen to every yeah. podcast. Yeah. Like they're so yeah. awesome. They,
shout out to
people
those
guys. Know ball.
Yeah.
They know
yeah.
ball.
Yeah, so, but mm-hmm. I do remember I did sign an NDA at one point because when they were bringing it back, I got to see SKUs before they came out, and like they did flyovers of stadiums and stuff. And I was mm-hmm. like, oh my God. Anyway, so I know this to be what the complaint is alleging is accurate based off of my experience, which is the photo shoots and the so they do one massive
the timing
shoot.
Of it, yeah,
is it's not just for the cover; it's for all of the marketing initiatives that will go like print. A broadcast, digital, all that stuff, that takes place like right now. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. The problem is that the shoot is done by the end of March, so they can go and start processing all the marketing material. So that's why, that was the timeline that they're alleging tripped up Trinidad to actually be the cover athlete.
Right, because the shoot would be happening kind of next week or the week after that, something like that.
Yeah, or even right now. So, yeah, that is the problem from EA's standpoint, is that do we go through this and then have to just bail? Even if he's one of two or one of three, do we just bail completely on that, on him in marketing?
Also, so as a part of the appeal process, the NCAA asked, not surprisingly, for the case to be moved out of the courthouse of the judge who seemed to emotionally cry as he gave the decision. So not surprisingly, they don't want that judge presiding over anything more in this case.
That is a classic naivete from the NCAA, because if they think he's the only one, they got another thing coming. He is not the exception, my friend. He is the rule.
Yeah. Well, it was a clearly successful legal strategy in the case of Trinidad Chambliss. And now they've tacked on some more legal strategy, and that's, you cost this dude some money, so gonna need some of that too. What? Mm-hmm. What an L that would be for the NCAA if not only does this guy get to play, but they also have to write him a check to settle this thing.
What if they should just put the NCAA logo on the cover, or the enforcement team? They should be the cover athletes since they want so much attention. Put them on the cover. Hi guys! All right. Shout out to Indy. I know you're listening.
We're going to stay in that vein, Godfrey. I'm glad you got there. I'm glad you got there. Because you have set up the stakes of the bet for if they actually suspend someone for tampering.
I have to eat.
There's a basketball coach who has a better idea, or at least a more entertaining idea, about how to deal with tampering. And I want to bring that to football. And of course, it being the first day of the real NCAA tournament, we're down to 64 teams here. They're playing right now as this pod is dropping. We're going to form a bracket. Which college coach would you not tamper with? Because if you did tamper with his players, he could legally kick your ass. Be right back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and of course, it being NCAA tournament time, we are going to shoehorn a bracket into a segment, but I think we've found the right way to do that. So, last week, USF basketball coach Brian Hodgson, former Nate Oates assistant, coveted by many, I believe he turned down the Syracuse job this week, and is now subject of a bidding war between USF and Providence. His team's playing Louisville in the first round. He was on with Jeff Goodman in Field of 68, and Jeff had asked him about tampering and how that works, what happens. And Brian Hodgson, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but I'm not sure how much, basically threatened to go Liam Neeson in Taken on any coach that might tamper with his players. He did say he had a particular set of skills that would make him a nightmare for coaches like that. And it got me thinking. So, on my On Three show, Ari Wasserman and I went through the coaches you'd be terrified to tamper with their players in college football. But we got to do this in bracket form. And someone pointed out to me, I had an emailer point out to me, I got the number one seed completely wrong. We didn't seed it on that show. We're going to seed it on this show.
Who's beating out Mario?
Mario is the one I said you'd be the most scared of.
Yeah.
I'm wrong there. All right. I'm wrong.
I can't.
Mario's
I'm not thinking. It's not coming to me.
No, I got nothing.
Mario's gonna be this is why I just had to do
unless
math.
It's age related.
It is what you played in high school related.
Oh boy.
There's a wrestler.
Sport
wait.
Makes you a good lineman.
Somebody, a wrestler.
Yeah, a wrestler. Yeah. Who really?
Wrestled?
You think
that
would be Wisconsin coach Luke Fickle?
He was all state.
In 3 years of varsity competition in the state of Ohio, he was 106-0 with three state titles at the heavyweight division.
Nice.
Luke Fickle
is your one seed. If you tamper with this Wisconsin player, you're going to die.
Mike Vrabel has talked about this, the current Patriots, former Titans head coach, because they were buddies that like...
They were roommates.
Fickle's lighter, but he will stomp some ass.
Fickle will
sure.
destroy you because he understands leverage. He understands all of the things that you need, he will destroy you.
Yeah, you're right.
So,
what are we weighing in at?
Cristobal's
right
done some MMA training.
Hang on, Andy.
Yeah, he's like, pretty light. I mean,
he's lost a lot of mass.
Yeah, he's pretty. He's
Cristobal is probably 6'5, 260 right now. He's pretty scary, too.
No,
Fickle. We're saying Fickle's
lighter. Yeah.
Fickle is trimmer.
Much lighter.
He's 52. Which I'm not going to hold against him because I ain't getting any.
Yeah, because Cristobal is older than that, actually.
He is. He's in his mid-50s,
55, maybe 56,
I don't know. This is tough because every time I see Fickle in person... So it's funny because every time I see Fickle in person, it's the opposite of what happens to most stressed out head coaches where they get the spare tire, they get the jowls. He's gotten trimmer.
Because he's a wrestler. Stress just makes him get better shape.
Okay. All right. I trust you on this. I mean, we're very much in your area of expertise. So
I don't know. I think I'd still go with the one seed
for Cristobal,
a Cuban man who once, I believe his brother shared with me, chased down a robber and like beat him bloodied in the street.
Yeah.
That's true. And the brother's
Miami.
An FBI agent, right? So
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there's a brother's component. I would give the advantage to Cristobal when you're growing up in that household too, because there's a latent like frequency of violence when you have brothers, as someone with two sons is aware of. This is tough, Andy. You're arguing for Fickle as an overall number one, the Duke.
Fickle's
of this
the number one
affair.
Seed. Cristobal is the number two. There's the guy I would have. Like you're scary. We're not seeding 64 of these guys.
Yeah,
I'd say let's seed 8. The guy would have like 4 or 5 that you look at him and it's like, I'm not too worried about him. But then when you got into it, you realize you're dealing with a honey badger is Kirby Smart. Kirby Smart, all SEC safety.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who?
I did see it.
I don't think he's lost much out of that.
See, I'm actually going with his buddy, Will Muschamp.
But he's not a head coach. So, like, Sark, I'm not worried about. Former BYU quarterback.
Oh, wait. They get to currently be a head coach. Okay.
Only the head coach can beat up the people tampering with their players.
Well, yeah. How about the guy? If not, we end up with strength and conditioning. So,
exactly.
Summerall.
Summerall. Yeah. So, I think Summerall should be in there, the new Florida coach.
He's John Summerall. He's in the top seeds. Yeah. I can confirm that John Summerall is country strong. I've been told.
Yeah. Former Kentucky linebacker. Led Kentucky in tackles before. Now he had, I don't know if it was spinal stenosis. He had an injury diagnosis that ended his career early. So, but he squats and deadlifts with the team still.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Now, I mean, we're just talking.
He's
bar
one
fight,
I'd worry
right?
about.
How about the guy out west in Eugene?
Dan Lanning.
Here's my thing about Dan Lanning, and I like this, Ross. I like that you brought this up. So I worked in a bar for a long, long time, and I saw a lot of conflict and. It sometimes is not about the size or the weight. It's about who's willing to get crazy enough to bite you in the face. And Dan Lanning is crazy
enough.
He's
like a biter.
He would just do whatever it took. Like, you're losing an ear, I think, in that fight. He might lose the fight, but you're losing. You're going to have to explain a facial scar for the rest of your life.
So we're definitely putting Dan Lanning in the top 8.
Yeah, totally.
So if Coach O were still coaching, this would be easy.
Y'all,
How about the this guy's old now? He's older, I guess. He's 63, maybe. Is Whittingham at?
That's where I was going to go next.
He's 66, I believe. But
that,
has not missed a workout since the Carter administration.
Yeah,
yeah.
He strikes me as that character, and like you know, every time you have a sort of modern day Western, and it's Tommy Lee Jones or Jeff Bridges, where it's like, man's past his prime, but then he still just stomps ass through the entire third act of the film. That's Whittingham.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing is, like, I don't know if you guys have watched Tulsa King.
I saw the pilot.
Very cheesy Sylvester Stallone show on Paramount
I saw
Plus.
The pilot,
I could not figure out who Kyle Whittingham reminded me of after winning, because Whittingham had shorter hair and then he grew it out.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure out who he reminds me of current Sly. Sylvester Stallone. They look, yeah, very similar. So I'm just imagining, you know, that age Rocky just kicking the shit out of somebody.
What if Elko has, because he's a Jersey born guy, he has that sort of like deceptive speed for a big dude, like a sort of Tony Soprano. Like when they would have fight scenes with Soprano, you'd always be like, man, Gandolfini's like can move quickly.
Jersey boy or a Frankie Valli Jersey boy? That's my, he's an Ivy Leaguer. So
Elko, I don't know, man. I think he's still got, he's
a pin.
Oh, so now no one from the Ivy League can kick anyone's ass?
Oh no, I'm not saying that.
You guys are pissing
off
hedge fund managers left and right.
But you're gonna put him up against Luke Fickell?
I'm just saying, no, I'm building a bracket. I'm not trying to supplant the number one seed. No,
actually, he might be against Luke Fickell. He might be the 8 seed and have to go against the 1.
Fellow Nashville sport parent who I see all the time at like kid hockey games and stuff. Clark Lee still very much in shape. Still got a motor. The problem with Clark.
I got one for you. Yeah. Former fullback.
Yeah.
Kalani Sitake.
Oh, that's a good one.
You know what's funny? I think Kalani's Sitake and Lee have the same thing that I was about to mention, which is that anecdotally, you hear this history of like sawed off, impatient, passionate dude, like would have definitely had your back in some like crappy bar fight on Broadway in Nashville when you're 23. Clark is so nice now. And Sitake's kind of the same way. It's like, have they matured out of having that fight in the dog mentality, so to speak?
Oh,
he's like so
about,
nice.
The face biting, we left somebody off.
Dan Lanning's going to bite your face.
No. We left
potentially
crazier
list.
Person than Dan Lanning. Think about who Kiffin. Needed the largest get back coach possible when he was a coordinator.
Oh.
Brent Venables. Will Byers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a country strong individual,
Venables
too. Yeah.
And Joey McGuire. Those are the two else I was going to offer. Is Venables and Joey.
Venables is a country strong.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah,
Venables is like the MMA fighter in the cage. Like this is he's the MMA fighter. He's an MMA champ in his weight class. But then he enters the you know blood sport type tournament and he's going against the heavyweight and he's just bouncing off him like a little spider monkey. Yeah,
Venables is an AI composite of the man you would least likely want to meet when picking up a girl for a date.
Mm. Oh, as he's a dad. Also, 100%.
He's got big middle-aged cop energy, and I say that as a compliment, as I was raised by a middle-aged cop. He's got Irish cop energy like you wouldn't believe. Yeah.
How about this person? Don't laugh, but could this person be quick enough and agile to be feisty? Is PJ Fleck?
Oh yeah, PJ Fleck played in the NFL.
Yeah.
Went from
I mean, just a smaller guy, on
Northern Illinois to playing there. Like, yes, I can see that.
No, yeah.
I'm going through the group of whatever now.
He tamps it down with the branding.
Oh, what about if we're going to the group of six, how about
I mean, Lance Taylor, have you seen the biceps on him, the Western Michigan coach?
Yeah, I know Lance's brother. He lives here in Nashville. Include Lance Taylor for sure.
Yeah.
Do you know who their dad was? Yeah, definitely. Alabama, legend. Yeah. Lance Taylor's getting in. He's a top
Spencer
seed.
Danielson.
It's been a minute.
I don't know. Spencer Danielson feels like he would be the nice Eddie Haskell type and then just
too nice
mask off.
Yeah. Which is fine. Yeah. I mean, which is fine. Yeah. You got Jerry Mack. Mm-hmm. You got Jerry Mack at
Kennesaw State coach.
Mm-hmm. A little bit younger than some of the guys that we talked about. I know he's my age, so I'm definitely not young. Jerry Mack at Kennesaw State. I think, how many have we named? Are we in the 16-ish neighborhood?
We definitely got
We could probably make a 16-person bracket here.
Oh, wait, but Colin Klein's a head coach now. Do we just think Colin Klein's too polite?
Or
No, he was a badass quarterback. And,
tough
our producer TJ mentions somebody. Yeah, speaking of people who were incredible linebackers.
Yeah, that's a good
Pat Fitzgerald is a head coach again.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, could see it.
All right, but we're not taking. I'm not going to challenge the Fickell thing. So we got a Fickell Mario 1-1A situation, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
in the entirety of the sport,
I think they're top of they're at the top of each side of the bracket essentially.
Oh, are we going to get in trouble because we didn't mention Fran Brown?
Oh, Fran Brown will take you down now.
That's
a good one too. Yeah,
in terms of fighting the dog metrics, he's 5'11", but I mean, there's people who are bigger who I'd pick a fight with before having to deal with Fran Brown.
I think he's one of those that will never stop. Like in the Venables vein.
I think he's a little closer to Dan Lanning face biting country for sure.
He's on the face biter list.
This is what I always tell people about Ron Zook. When Ron Zook was a head coach, I was like, this is the guy you will not mess with because he will
especially if you're a fraternity
guy. He's like
the
knight in Monty Python. Like you can keep chopping limbs off, he's still coming.
As evidenced by his fight on Fraternity Row, or his near fight on Fraternity Row.
Well, listen, when your center gets hit in the face with a mag light.
I knew you'd be on this. I knew you'd,
I
knew
was
you'd
on
have
the beat
deets.
At the time. I know exactly what
I
happened.
I knew you'd have the deets. Man, I have agita about this segment because I'm going to get a text message and someone's going to be deeply offended.
Well, like, and that's what happened because I cheated because I did this once and we left Fickle out and I felt terrible about it. So.
Yeah. I'm going to get a text message, and what's so funny about college football coaches is that I'll get a text message and someone will be deeply offended that they weren't included on this list. But if we did just a segment on, like, who's the smartest coach, no one would care.
No,
this offends their manhood, specifically.
Worried more about who can win a fight.
Can we go to the NCAA enforcement staff and be like, guys, listen, I don't think you're going to be able...
Wait, is Golding on this list? Golding might be.
We need to put him on. What about Dabo? Dabo is a walk-on wide receiver at Alabama.
That's true too.
You think Dabo can't handle hard things?
Golding seems like he should be on this list.
Golding is the.
I think
we have
to match it. They always say the committee in the basketball tournament doesn't have a sense of drama. They don't. But I find that very hard to believe because like they got Calipari and Patino playing last year. Like they know what they're doing.
Ross,
like you
Golding,
have to set up the bracket so that Golding and Sweeney would win their first round matches and wind up against each other in round two.
Battle.
Golding is, because he literally is, Ross, and you'll understand this reference, the country
he's
ass.
From Hammond, first of
well,
all.
He's the but he's the country ass football player at a small school who goes in to party in Starkville or Oxford on the weekend. And he's a little short and a little sawed off and a little too redneck for the town and always ends up fighting a bouncer.
Fighting somebody, yeah, that's right, and getting arrested
100%
in the town,
yeah,
sounds like it.
What I'm saying is that's a high motor individual in a fight. I don't know if he's a face biter necessarily because I think he can just rely on that low center and high motor, but he's there's a lot of
Hammond
fight
America.
In that individual. Hammond
well,
America.
So my question is this: like,
yeah,
this feels like a better way to enforce this. Can we just put Golding and Sweeney in the octagon and the winner faces Lane Kiffin?
Lane Kiffin
and then we just
is not
call it square
fight
at the end of the day.
Andy, Lane Kiffin is not going to fight anybody.
Let's
He's
a lover,
110%
not a
clear. My guy, I don't
way,
know if
like
my guy's ever thrown a punch in his life.
To toss in a little maybe more like newsy element to this is the NCAA continues its investigation into serious tampering allegations, and I would expect that Ole Miss,
there are
if
no
it hasn't
serious
already,
tampering allegations. As you learn by this segment, we do not take it seriously.
Yeah. So, we're going to see multiple investigations, probably a lot from Ole Miss turning in other schools because they were turned in, and so on and so on and so on.
Reservoir Dogs.
Yep. Listen, guys, we have your solution because. We know you're not actually going to, because here's what's going to happen. They're going to say, they're going to start writing up the punishments and like, here's what we're going to do. And all these commissioners will be like, oh my God, all my coaches are getting suspended. We can't have this. So again, Dabo and Pete Golding in the octagon. And then we call it a day. Who doesn't watch?
I like it.
Got to do some cardio, boys.
All right, guys. I realize it's a football show. Football fans all listening. But it is one of the greatest sports weekends of the year. Let's all go watch some basketball, and we'll talk to you guys on Tuesday.